statutes that Mr. Rabe has, or Mr. Roach has cited, are applicable to non-emergency health care decision-making. They pertain solely, I don't have to fund them, but they pertain to parenting schedule and residential and parenting time. The statutes most clearly state that there are two different levels of thresholds of evidence for particular circumstances. It's been written about extensively. Either one of these statutes apply. And these are the only statutes in the code that are applicable to material change of circumstances related to modifying parenting plan. We have case law about it, yes. But the main case law that we need to be paying attention to is Hawk v. Hawk and its progeny, because it is constitutional, solid bedrock law that you cannot abrogate a parent's rights with respect to her children without a showing of harm. Serious harm. I don't have the case in front of me, but that's been the law of Tennessee since that case was decided, and its progeny. And there's been no harm shown here. So irrespective of the traditional analysis of material change of circumstances and then best interest, we need to be looking at Hawk v. Hawk and the Tennessee Constitution, which it's been held, as Your Honor well knows, protects more robustly parental rights than the United States Constitution does. There has been absolutely no showing of serious harm. The only thing that Dr. Hand said when asked that question directly, and I phrased it pretty much as DCS would, statutes deal with taking custody of a child away from the parents, is what imminent risk of serious harm is there if these children are not vaccinated immediately for COVID-19? And his answer repeatedly was, primary risk of harm would be long COVID, and the secondary risk is hospitalization. And that, of course, he admitted, would be contingent on getting COVID and getting it serious enough that you could have long COVID as a consequence, which is symptomatic by definition. It is not a disease. It is a set of symptoms that linger after the initial infection. So Dr. Hand himself, who is their best shot at showing harm, and Mr. Rabler today admitted that he can't put his finger on any harm that's been caused by the past 2 or 3 years of my client not taking a vaccine that has been proven to cause myocarditis and pericarditis in young men and boys exactly his age group of his children. And that evidence has come out repeatedly in this case. Dr. Boston cited autopsy studies that showed repeatedly that myocarditis, vaccine-induced myocarditis, was the cause of death. Not viral myocarditis, but vaccine cause. There's been no proof whatsoever. In fact, Your Honor, as I recall, had to draw it out of Dr. Hand. He didn't come out of the box with that. He didn't say, okay, well, the first thing I need to tell you, Your Honor, is that this vaccine has been shown to be causally related to myocarditis in young men and boys of these age group. I need to tell you, Your Honor, that just to be clear. You had to ask the question. And you even had to have the question, what have been the adverse effects of this? Well, have anyone died? I remember distinctly, you said, has anyone died? Well, yes, he admitted that too. He was not volunteering that information. But what you got from Dr. Boston was that there has been evidence of that in the autopsy studies, and you got that from Dr. Sibley as well. Subclinical myocarditis, she said, was particularly a problem because the child does not know, does not have symptoms, shortness of breath, tightness in the chest. They can start to wake up in the morning and their adrenaline starts to surge and they can die of cardiac arrest, cardiac arrhythmia. Or they can die in the ball field without ever having had any symptoms. That's what Dr. Simmons said about you. And as of August 23rd, 2021, Pfizer was ordered to do multiple studies, up to 9 studies, many of which were directly related to this situation, young men and boys, 12 to 15 years old. The one that I cited for Mr. Raymond to consider, going to be completed in 2027. Now, there's no discernible risk from COVID right now in this land for young men and boys. We've moved on. The world has moved on. And Tennessee, according to what Dr. Sibley said, is not buying this vaccine. The new one has come out. And for that matter, the COVID variant has left town. There is no vaccine on the market that actually deals with whatever is left of COVID right now. Fact is, mother has complied with her parenting plan. It's a contract. She has complied with it. Father has shown no breach of his agreement with her. And yet suddenly, even though he's dropping the issue about vaccinating them immediately, which is what the whole petition is about, except for the fact that mother is a kook and she's irrational because she's refused to have them vaccinated, he says, well, they should have been vaccinated back then. Dr. Bostrom's testimony, remember, was that during the height of the vaccine crisis, of the Wuhan strain, mortality risk for 0 to 19 years, 0.0003%. That is, by definition, statistical zero risk at the height of the pandemic. And from that point on, they've got less and less of a risk. So there's no proof whatsoever for Mr. Raven's statement, without any expert testimony to support it, that they should have been vaccinated back then. And the fact that mother didn't let them be vaccinated means that she should not be able to engage in the parenting plan that she and Mr. Raven agreed to. That somehow she's disqualified. And I would say, Your Honor, I agree that technically speaking, this is not a termination of parental rights. I agree with that. But it is an abridgment of parental rights, most definitely, because what is there left of parental rights if you take away a mother's right to protect her children from harm? And the harm is in the risk that taking these vaccines, or letting them take these vaccines, letting these boys go on the information they have, which is basically what they're being told by their parents and the TV and whatever it is, letting them decide that would be irresponsible. What they need to do is grow up and make the decision for themselves. And if Pfizer and BioNTech follows through, which to date apparently they have, but there's been no proof to show that they have, I'm sure Dr. Hand would have brought it in if it helped Mr. Raven. There's been no proof that they brought that forward, but if they do in these children's lifetime, they'll benefit from that. And I ask you also, Your Honor, to apply the missing witness rule, or some version of it, to acknowledge the fact that the treating physician has not testified in this case. And if anyone would have been concerned about the children's welfare because of something that mother was withholding from them, I believe that Dr. Long would have been glad to show up and testify to that fact, but he has not. And I believe the inference should be raised, and can be raised at Your Honor's discretion, that if he were to show up, he would not have been that much help, to say the very least, in Mr. Raven's case. I don't believe the material change of circumstances applies, Your Honor. I believe it's the Constitution of Tennessee and the Constitution of the United States. I believe that Hawk v. Hawk is the ruling law here. There has been, for that matter, no proof of material change of circumstances. These boys got sick and they got well. What other Tennessee child can they be compared to that got sick and got well? They had to go to school in their bedroom. Everybody in Tennessee experienced the same thing. There's been no material change due to COVID. They got sick and they got well. No material change of circumstances that affects their best interest. Now, the only thing that could be, Your Honor, would be the COVID, because Your Honor has said a few minutes ago that the issue is whether or not they should be vaccinated for COVID-19. So that's the linchpin issue. If mother failed in that decision making, then he wants to bootstrap that into taking her out of the picture completely. But she hasn't failed. She protected her children, and she made a nuisance of herself with her former husband and his family and her children. But she said, like mothers do sometimes, no. No. And I submit that in this case here, the impasse speaks with authority. I'm speaking with a little training in Rule 31 mediation, and in particularly in transformative mediation, and we follow the conflict, and we let the conflict speak for itself. And if these parents have not arrived at a unanimous decision, then it's analogous to a hung jury. And that's okay. They can make their decision. They can keep on discussing. They can keep on working through the issues. And if something changes out there, if we have another wave of virus that puts these children at risk, we'll know about it. It'll be more than 0.0003% mortality. And And I can assure you, my client will jump at looking at whatever we can do to protect them. But right now, the impasse has effectively protected those children from whatever that vaccine could have caused them, and it could have caused them heart damage that could not be repaired. But it hasn't, because they didn't take it. They got sick and they got well. I have nothing further. All right, thank you. I do ask you to enforce the parenting plan. That's our prayer for relief, is just to apply the parenting plan as written.
First of all, I want to get everybody clear on where they are. I think Mr. Roche cited applicable law in this case. 36.6.101. Lowercase a. Capital B, lowercase I.
you say five pages?
Five business.